live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is Talkback. Once a week at this time, we open our phones so people can share their comments, points of view, insights, all positive. I'm going to start off with the latest on health and healing, and then you'll be able to call in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and I look forward to all the different calls from all over the United States, and in the very near future, it'll also extend around the world. Our one company that you can call in and listen to this program over the telephone, just put it on speaker or cordless and listen in. And truck drivers and cab drivers and people out at all hours, they're no longer bound to be in front of a radio, and that's so important, or a computer. That number, write this down, 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Today, I'm also going to share some insights of my own, along with Konstantin Erickson, a guest writer for Wake Up World, on the science of epigenetics. The issue is how our minds can reprogram our genes. Also, time permitting, the Bank of America, you know, that gets over $2 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars in our money, but no interest. Well, it turns out a whole bunch of them were, according to the whistleblowers, we were told to lie and to rip off borrowers and to foreclose on their homes and not give them a break. Why? They got away with it until the whistleblowers came forward. And now they're telling the truth. So then the question is, what should we do with Bank of America? And they're still getting money, free money, all they want. Is this right? No, it's not. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. We know that testosterone is important for men. We know that that's what gives men their virility, their sense of that being uniquely masculine. According to the latest research from Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, it's also very important for women, especially postmenopausal women, because the newest research shows that it improves learning and memory in those postmenopausal women. This was presented at the Endocrine Society's annual meeting. Quote, this is the first large placebo-controlled study of the effects of testosterone on mental skills in postmenopausal women who are not on estrogen therapy. That's according to the MD-PhD AHEAD research. Our study has confirmed our similar findings from two smaller studies in postmenopausal women and suggests that testosterone therapy may protect women against cognitive decline after menopause. So then the question is this, and they don't deal with this at all. They merely notice the phenomena. Then, okay, what do you do? How do you help yourself? Well, it's not difficult. First, you want to understand that when you have too much estrogen, you will end up imbalancing testosterone and progesterone, and especially in women. And that's why many women end up with cancers and heart disease postmenopausal, is because they have too much estrogen. So where do you get that estrogen? Well, being overweight, fat creates estrogen, a high-protein diet creates estrogen, and stress creates estrogen. So most women who are postmenopausal are overweight and are on a protein diet of some form, and they're stressed. So you have to go towards a healthy vegan diet, lots of juices and exercise, and then you can shift over the estrogen to a progesterone balance, and then the vegan diet is a highly proficient diet at promoting testosterone. I'm working with someone that you'll hear tomorrow. You'll hear a mother and daughter tomorrow on my program talking about 1 month after starting what will be about a 2-year program on Alzheimer's. The mother has stage 5 Alzheimer's and had a lot of problems. In my first meeting with them, In 10 minutes, she repeated herself 10 times. She was looping, what's called looping. This is the latest, but she's making progress, and you'll hear when I hear it tomorrow at noon. This is from Science Daily, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's publication Neurology. Diet can affect Alzheimer's disease risk. Here's what they say. Quote, lipid states are modifications of certain proteins in the brain that are related to the development of Alzheimer's disease appear to differ depending upon genotype and cognitive disease. And these proteins and peptides appear to be influenced by diet. And this is what it's reporting. Well, of course, it's affected by diet. In a very real sense, most of the diet of the average American is processed. It's excessive in fat and protein. It is highly inflammatory, and that is saturated fat that can injure the brain. So, where they don't tell you what kind of diet you should have, at least they're acknowledging that diet affects Alzheimer's risk. And we're saying, well, we know what causes that. It's a highly inflammatory diet. So go towards a more alkaline diet, again, a healthy vegetarian diet. Now, obesity also leads to brain inflammation, and low testosterone makes it worse. This is from the University of Southern California. And here's what they say, quote, low testosterone worsens the harmful effects of obesity in the nervous system. Quote, low testosterone and obesity are common in aging men, and each is associated with type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. And so what they're saying is this, if you're overweight, you're far more likely to have an inflamed brain and a low testosterone level. And if you have a low testosterone level and you're overweight, you're almost surely causing brain inflammation, and that can lead to Alzheimer's. Now, when you look at the average man today, after the age of 40, you're looking at a person that does not exercise regularly. More often than not, will be eating far more calories than what they need. So there's no sense of calorie restriction, which is very healthy. And they're eating a high percentage of their calories from what we call empty calories, junk calories. If you eat an apple, you're getting some calories, but they're good. You're getting some sugar, but it's a good natural sugar. It won't spike your glycemic index. But if you had a candy bar, you're getting junk calories and junk sugar, and it's bad for you. So going towards an enzyme raw foods program would be great for men to help protect their brains. Now, along with that junk food diet comes a lot of salt. And then if they want to get people to really like something, they put both salt and sugar in. And so that you're getting two tastes simultaneously. This is the University of Rome. Quote, excessive salt consumption is bad for your bones. This is the latest study that shows that we're taking in too much salt, and that sodium imbalances the hormones and that are responsible for activating the mineral colloidal or corticoid receptors, and that ends up causing demineralization. So in just lay language, when you start pumping on the salt, when you have those French fries or the pizza, or you have potato chips or just salt that you're throwing on stuff, you're creating the biochemistry of osteoporosis. Sometimes people will come by and say, Gary, I got a really bad case of gas. What do? I say charcoal capsules, activated charcoal. People don't understand how powerful charcoal is. Charcoal has a lot of benefits, especially the activated charcoal. And here are some of the reasons why you should, why you should always keep a bottle of charcoal capsules with you, wherever you're traveling. It has a negative ionic charge that attracts positive ionic charges of toxins and poisons. Those poisons bind with the charcoal, and then they're able to be removed through the intestines. Charcoal is good for chelating heavy metals like lead and aluminum. It also helps to neutralize a lot of the bad odors in the body. It can help you if you've ended up with diarrhea, if you have ulcers, and it reduces the gas after a meal. And it eliminates many of the microorganisms and chlorine from drinking water. So it's terrific for you. I would simply always have it there, and it's good for removing parasites and bacteria that are harmful to the body. And it also is good for removing fungi and yeast like candida. And so I suggest have a bottle always. Also now we're finding that breast milk is now being impacted by BPA. And that's not good. That's bisphenol A, which is a well-known endocrine disruptor. And that's because so many women have a diet that is not healthy, and the bisphenol is getting into their system, and then they're giving it to their infant. Not good. That's why I suggest that before you get pregnant, always detoxify. And detoxify for at least a year. All right, 1 year. And that way you're using chelation through juicing, through EDTA. You're getting rid of the heavy metals. You're getting rid of the sugar. All that is good for you. So all the things you need to do to detoxify, clean up your system, you're able to do. And that's helpful. Then you get pregnant. If it's an intended pregnancy, then you have a chance of having a really healthy child. Now, last week I mentioned some of the positive impact of having flaxseed. There's a new study out from the American Journal of Physiology and Circulation Research, and it shows again that flaxseed or its oil can help get rid of a lot of the plaque that builds up in our arteries that can cause arterial atherosclerosis. It also is an ideal estrogen alternative for women who are in postmenopause or menopause. In fact, having a woman who's, let's say, 40 and up, if you were to have 1 teaspoon twice a day of flaxseed oil, you'd be doing yourself a great deal of good. And there's over 50 major health benefits of using flaxseed. So get your omega-3 fatty acids from flaxseed and help your heart. Very important. It also helps protect against cancer as well. And finally, on health and nutrition, there is an herb. It's called Paudarco, Paudarco. It's from South America. It's been used to help the body deal with harmful organisms. But according to the latest research, this 1,500-year-old herb does a lot more. It is able to keep your immune system strong, and that's important. They found that the body's defense mechanism increases its activity level by more than 40% when Paudarco was ingested on a regular basis. Now, there are two chemicals in the bark of the Paudarco that were shown to be extremely beneficial. One was called a lapachol, L-A-P-A-C-H-O-L, and beta-lapachol. And they have great promise in fighting off metastasis of cancer. So it's a big cancer provider for benefit to the person, especially human lung cancer and also colorectal cancer and squamous cell carcinoma and cervical carcinoma and pancreatic carcinoma and lung carcinoma and bladder carcinoma and renal cell carcinoma and thyroid carcinoma. All of those were shown to benefit the body by using Paudarco. So one more thing that's natural, non-toxic, that we should use that can help on a regular basis. You don't have to take it all the time, but if you took it, let's say, once a week, that would be good. Now, I have been very concerned that we're not learning about epigenetics on all levels. For example, we now have really good proof that the quality of our father's life when the father was a child would predispose that father to have a memory of what was traumatic to the father that is transferred through his sperm as a memory into the developing fetus, so that the fetus then takes on some of the memory of the father in his earlier time. Now, it seems hard for a lot of people to grasp that, but in the idea of what happens once something starts, and each generation thereafter takes on some of the qualities and characteristics, this is part of what we now know. So just imagine that. How infrequent is it that people ask their fathers to go back in their own emotional history and remember things as a kid and see whether the child, your father as a child, had traumatic experiences or happy experiences and messages that were constructive and helped him, or messages that were abusive and destructive? Because that's one of the ways of understanding how we become who we are. Now, that does not mean that we automatically become that. It means that that we're predisposed. But predisposed does not mean that we do not have free will and we can't change the environment. We certainly can. And when we change our environment to one that's positive and loving and nurturing, we also then change the energy expression of the DNA. Time and again, I've seen people who've acted out, been negative and toxic, self-sabotaging, destroyed relationships, destroyed business opportunities, and alienated people, and are clueless, absolutely don't understand why anyone doesn't want to be around them. Well, hello, I mean, if you're a really nice person and you have a lot of good things going for you, a lot of people want to be around you. But when you're not a nice person, it's easy to see why people won't want to be around you. I'd love to be around nice people, but I'm not going to be around anyone who's going to be negative and toxic. What's the purpose of that? What in the world do you think is going to be the outcome of being around people who are angry, spiteful, jealous, rageful, negative? Or put it this way, how many negative emails, how many negative letters, how many negative voicemails would you get before you'd finally say, what is the purpose of this? And then you say, you reach the magic number, goodbye. But will that person ever understand why they are addicted to toxic reactions? Probably not. Not unless they have a really good holistic therapist like Dr. Grayson or one of the people out there who's shown themselves to really understand this. So much is in the epigenetics. That's why time and again I say to people, look, if life isn't what it should be for you, if you're not finding the joy and happiness and excitement and creativity and the bliss and the synchronizing of your energy with others, then change your environment. Change the people you're with. It's your right. It's your life. The idea that somehow, well, I've committed myself to this job, or I committed myself to living here, or that's stupid. You know, it's one thing to make a bad choice, and then it's another to double down on it. You know, the idea is to free yourself and start over. And that's why the more healthy the environment, the greater the chance that you're going to change. Now, Konstantin Erickson has a little different perspective on this. His belief is that how much control do we have over our own lives? Are we really controlled by our genes, trapped in our own selfishness, like some modern authors want us to believe? Just how much do we have to shape our lives in the way of power and those of others? Well, contrary to what many people are being led to believe, a lot of the emphasis placed on genes determining human behavior is nothing but theory and doctrine. What they call the selfish gene model is an assumption. I absolutely agree. There is no science to back it up. And here's the central dogma. The central dogma is the doctrine that information in our cells flows only in one direction, from DNA to the RNA to proteins, simply put, in lay language. It is a dogmatic belief in absolute determinism. Now, let me just go back a moment. Back in 1990, a huge international research program began, and the Human Genome Project was commenced. It started in a way that was given a lot of fanfare. Its goals were to map out all human genes and their interactions using computer software, and then to convert that knowledge into very profitable benefits for the people who own the patents on them, because they would then say, okay, you don't have cancer, but you have the genes for it, so we're going to give you this technology that will prevent your cancer. You don't have a heart attack. You don't have elevated blood pressure. You don't have anger issues right now, but you're going to because your genes, so we're going to give you some medication that we also own and patent. That was the whole deal in a nutshell. It was purely mercenary. In essence, what the central dogma says is that since it is proteins that carry out the essential life processes inside our cells, and their functions can only do what our genes say. This is what the medical establishment, certain fanatical branches of evolution theory want us to believe. Then we humans are nothing more than the calculated, deterministic expression of our genes. I'm adamantly opposed to this. Well, otherwise, then we're just nothing more than little robots whose biology and emotions and health and beliefs are not of our own choosing. We're humatons. This is the theory that is being taught in medical schools and universities all over the world. That's why when you go to your doctor and your doctor doesn't seem to be a very warm and caring, compassionate, or optimistic person, is certainly not going to look for anything in a body-mind way of helping you, because what's a body-mind have to do with it? What's the diet have to do with it? It's in your genes. No, sir, it is not your genes. But it's a very disempowering belief, and it's been proven to be false. So here is the issue. Is evolution deterministic? 50 years before the publication of Darwin's The Origin of the Species, there was a Frenchman named Jean-Baptiste Lamarckeau, and he postulated that living beings must have an innate perception of their environment in order to evolve, and that they evolve in response to changes in their surroundings. His idea was that genetic mutations are definitely not random. There is an inherent intelligence at play in life that we can't even begin to understand. The response of the so-called perfect scientific community at the time was not favorable. They ridiculed his work. Jean-Baptiste was considered a nut. And in effect, they wrote him out of all the history books, giving Darwin the sole credit for discovering evolution, even though, in reality, Darwin published his book 50 years after Jean-Baptiste had published his book, based upon a lot of its theory on the work of yet another man, Alfred Russel Wallace, many of whose ideas Darwin copied. Now, according to Jean-Baptiste, there's an interplay of forces between living beings and their environments. According to Darwin's model, evolution is strictly deterministic and is based on random mutations. So, who got closer to the truth? Luckily for us, Jean-Baptiste was right about at least one thing. Cells have consciousness. The emerging science of epigenetics proves it. There are plenty of highly intelligent biologists have proven beyond a doubt that the determinism of the central dogma is false. It is a fraud. Genes do not determine human outcomes. It is our responses to our environment that actually determine the expression of our genes. This was proven definitely in 1988 by the British molecular biologist John Cairns. Cairns took bacteria whose genes did not allow them to produce lactose, the enzyme needed to digest milk sugar, and place them in a petri dish where the only food present was lactose. Well, much to his astonishment, within a few days, all of the petri dishes had been colonized by the bacteria, and they were eating lactose. The bacterial DNA had changed in response to its environment. Now, this environment has been replicated many times, and they have not found a better explanation than this obvious fact that even primitive organisms can evolve consciously. So information flows in both directions, from DNA to proteins and from proteins to DNA, contradicting the central dogma. Genes can be activated and deactivated by signals from the environment. The consciousness of the cell is inside the cell's membrane, and each and every cell in our bodies, all 100 trillion, has a type of consciousness. Genes can change their expression depending upon what is happening outside our cells and even outside our bodies. So what does this mean for us? What's the takeaway message? We are free to make decisions that impact our lives and those of others. We are not robots carrying out the commands of our genes. Our beliefs can change our biology. We have the power to heal ourselves and increase our feelings of self-worth and improve our emotional state. Every aspect of our lives can be improved with the right intention. The worst thing we can do as thinking and feeling people is to get cut off from our deep, positive emotions and let fear and anger take over our lives. When we allow ourselves to be taken over by negativity, we're putting ourselves in a mental, biological state of fear akin to the fight-or-flight response. In order to grow positively as human beings, we need to express positive emotions as love, but it must be unconditional. And therein is the conditioning, and there is the dark side of the genetic expression. If you come from a mother or father or both who hate blacks or Jews or Muslims or anyone else who have been abused, then you do have the genetic expression. So it is through free will that once you recognize at a conscious level within your existence, generally as an early teen, that your reactions are not based upon reason and sensibility. You're acting out. You may not know why, but the outcome is always going to be negative. Being the bully, being the manipulator, being the liar, being the user, being the provocateur, being the triangulator that never takes responsibility for any mistake but always figures a way of blaming others, the malicious gossip. I know a man whose life I helped save. And when I helped save his life, I said, understand something. I hope that you don't go back to being this malicious gossip monger at night, having all these women call you to share their stories of woe so you can save them, because your whole purpose for being in your mind is saving people and you haven't been able to save yourself. You're a mess. He got the message. Whether or not he's implemented it, I don't know. But if he doesn't, then his outcome is not going to be nice. But it's possible to change all that. So then which was right? His DNA that has taken on all these negative messages, and he's just been replaying them in his own way with his own unique personality and his own life energy, or to be able to take a negative and through self-determination and discipline, spiritual discipline, to reverse what otherwise would be a negative outcome into a positive outcome. And that's where we're at today, where a lot of people would like to be healthy and happy, but they don't have the determination. So then whatever is in their genes will determine the outcome. There's only two ways this story is going to end for everyone. There's no exception. Either you wake up and see one day, gee whiz, now that I'm at my destination, I'm alone, I don't have any friends, or I'm broke, or I'm sick, that now I can look back and understand some of the mistakes I've made. Yes, that's possible, if you survive. But I think there's a much more dynamic and beneficial way of learning, and that is to ask yourself, what do you want your outcomes to be? And then select the highest standard possible. And then only make choices in your life, no matter what you have to sacrifice, or no matter what risk you have to take, to ensure that at least you are, through self-actualization and self-will, you're determining the outcome of your life. Not fate, not some mystical being, you. And anytime someone starts giving credit for everyone else We're special beings. They're not giving credit to themselves, either for the problems that exist or the solutions that manifest. So when people do stupid things or people do destructive things and wonder why people don't want to be around them, all they have to do is understand you got to get up out of where you're at because everything is just on automatic and stop it and change it. Get into a healthier environment. Get into healthier relationships. Get into a healthier state of being. Become the healthy person you want to be. And then your genes will follow suit. I'm Gary Nall. One last thing from our issues. This is from Salon.com, David Dayan. It says, Bank of America whistleblower bombshell. We were told to lie to rip off borrowers. Quote, this is short but really significant. Bank of America's mortgage servicing unit systematically lied to homeowners, fraudulently denied loan modifications, and paid their staff bonuses for deliberately pushing people into foreclosure. Yes, these allegations were suspected by any homeowner who ever had to deal with the bank to try to get a loan modification, but now they come from six former employees and one contractor whose sworn statements were added last week to a civil lawsuit filed in federal court in Massachusetts. And, quote, the Bank of America's practice is to string homeowners along with no apparent initiation of providing the permanent loan modifications it promises, said Erica Brown, one of the former employees. The damning evidence would spur a series of criminal investigations of Bank of America executives if we still had a rule of law in this country, but we don't. The White House, the Justice Department are controlled by Wall Street, and that's the truth of it, and we all know that. The government's Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP, which gave banks cash incentives to modify loans under certain standards, was supposed to streamline the process and help up to 4 million struggling homeowners. It didn't. In reality, Bank of America used it as a tool, say these former employees, to squeeze as much money as possible out of the struggling borrowers before eventually foreclosing on them. Borrowers were supposed to make 3 trial payments before the loan modification became permanent. In actuality, many of the borrowers would make payments for a year or more, only to find themselves rejected for permanent modification and then owing the difference between the trial modification and the original payments. Wasn't former Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, who famously described HAMP as a means to, quote, foam the runway for the banks, spreading out foreclosures so banks could move more readily to absorb them? These Bank of America employees offer the first glimpse into how they pulled it off. Employees, many of whom alleged they were given no basic training on how to even use HAMP, were instructed to tell borrowers that documents were incomplete or missing when they were not, or that the file was under review when it had not been accessed in months. Former loan-level representative Simone Gordon says flat out in her affidavit that, quote, we were told to lie to customers about the receipt of documents and trial payments. She added that the bank would hold financial document borrowers submitted for review for at least 30 days. Once 30 days passed, Bank of America would consider many of these documents to be stale. The homeowner would be told to reapply for modification. Worse than this, Bank of America would simply throw out documents on a consistent basis. Former case management supervisor William Wilson alleged that during bimonthly sessions called the Blitz, case managers and underwriters would simply deny any file with financial documents that were 60 days old. During a Blitz, a single team would decline as many as 1,500 modifications at one sitting. Quote, I personally reviewed hundreds of files in which the computer system showed that the homeowner had fulfilled a trial period plan and was entitled to a permanent loan modification, but was nonetheless declined for a permanent modification during a blitz. And then employees were instructed to make up a reason for the denial to submit to the Treasury Department. Senior managers provided carrots and sticks for the employees to lie to customers. If you got the home into foreclosure, you were given $500 bonus. Yep. What does it mean? Well, it means this. Think of how many millions of Americans, families, that means, let's say if there were 4 million families, that's 8 million people, were thrown out of their house Does anyone in Washington, that fetid cesspool of total and complete corruption, that is the total complete corruption of our government, which is completely corrupt at every level, do you think any single person in Washington gives a damn about what happens to a mere, let's say, 16 million Americans? They only care about Bank of America. The people at Bank of America have committed gross fraud. But nothing will happen to anyone. All the people who were engaged in the scam, scot-free. All the directors of Bank of America, nothing will happen. To the people who are homeless and had to go live with relatives or find another place, no one will care. That's America today. And let's see if this makes any news stories. It won't. Back in a moment with your calls, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Have you with us, everyone? Let's go to the calls. Let's say hello to our first caller, Ann from New Jersey. Hi, Ann.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to find out about my daughter-in-law. My grandson has lead, and how to get rid of it. They eat mostly organic, and she uses good water, but he was tested, and he has some lead.
Mm-hmm.
That they felt was
the best way of helping is with a gentle chelation therapy, because first chelating agents can bind with heavy metals like cadmium or mercury or lead, whatever you're trying to get out, and that enters the body, however it enters the body, and takes it out, and then that can help the body start the process of healing. Because if you have too much lead, that can interfere with calcium, iron, and potassium, and other antioxidants. Historically, it's used to treat atherosclerosis and circulatory disorders, and as even gangrene, or poor circulation. And oral chelation is the safest and most convenient, especially for someone who's young, and a medical doctor has to do it. And generally, you will use chelating agents on a slow basis and start up, like rutin and fiber, gentle fibers. Berry fibers are very good, with coenzyme A and coenzyme Q10. Also, copper chelate and zinc chelate. Those are good oral chelators, helping get rid of the toxics. And then DMG, and that is good because it increases the tissue oxidation. And some apple pectin is really soft and easy upon the body, easy to tolerate. It binds with heavy metals, removes them from the body through the intestine. And garlic is excellent as a chelating and detoxifying agent. Now, what I just mentioned for youngster is easy, and there's nothing adverse to it. Some of the other things I wouldn't mention because they'd be a little strong, but vitamin C is also good as a natural chelator. And you want to eat as many things like brown rice, oats, also what I mentioned earlier in the program about flaxseed. Flaxseed is good also. And having quality protein, And I would use pea or rice powder for that. That can make a difference as well. Onions are really good too, because they can help thin the blood. But in a four-year-old, they're a good chelator because of their sulfur. All right, I wouldn't go to an intravenous chelation therapy, EDTA, which it wouldn't be of use there. Okay, all the best to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let's say hello to, let's see who we have here. We have Luann. Hi, Luann.
Gary, I have an email here from, they don't tell me their name, that they are from Brooklyn, and says, I've been listening to you on WBAI, I had been, for about 15 years. And then when they got rid of you, I started listening to PRN, and he says, thank you for having that station for us to listen to. He says, now I listen every day. And I said, I would listen to WBAI if they had any decent program, any programming that's really good. Because they don't, so I nor my friends don't listen anymore because it's just not listenable. He said, but I heard you respond to Luann when she brought this up, that in order to save WBAI, there were options to consider. Can you please go over what they are again? And more importantly, what is the likelihood that Pacifica would implement them?
Right now, WBAI and WPFW are having a severe crisis. Last week, all of BAI's paid employees were given a termination notice. I believe within 30 days, they'll no longer be paid, and therefore they will be invited to stay on, as I have been for 36 years, on BAI as an unpaid volunteer, or they'll have to find work elsewhere. I'm sure many will find work elsewhere, but some I'm sure already are unpaid. But there are some good programs on there, The Hour of the Wolf, As I Please, Through the Opera Glass, I think is terrific. I hear of A Sunday Morning with Chris Wendt, James Ursay. He's one of the finest pianists and world travelers, and he is a raconteur par excellence. Good shows like that. And there are a couple others as well. Robert Knight's terrific, I like, and Earl Caldwell Chronicles. So it's not as if it's unlistenable. There are shows that are extremely well done and shows that are not. But the problem is not whether there's some good or not so good shows. The problem is that the station over a period of years, at least the last 12 years, has in effect ghettoized itself. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that it has been taken over for a substantial period of time by people who wanted the station run their own way, and believed that no other way was legitimate. And they had their way. They had absolute and complete control. And so they did what they wanted to, put their programs in, put the people in positions of management. And for the vast majority of listeners, they abandoned the station. And that was so obvious it was going to happen. But it's not obvious to the people who are engaging in something like that. When you have power, it's so easy, if you're not a spiritually evolved person, to allow the power that you have, the power to run a station, the power to program, the power to run a local station board. It's very easy to allow yourself to be influenced by the power. And we see this everywhere in politics. In fact, I was just watching an interview where a man said that the entire political process in this country is corrupting. Because what does it tell us about someone who knows that they're seeking power over other people? Should we trust people who need power over other people? And the answer is no, we shouldn't. But the people who would best run our affairs, help us, are people who are never going to get elected to anything. So more often than not, we keep getting the same kind of sociopathic behavior in so many of the people who want power over our lives. But when you have people who do not have professional backgrounds in programming, do not have professional backgrounds in fundraising, do not have professional background in understanding the American public in matching premiums to their needs, then you have a disaster going to happen. It's not, is it going to happen? It's just when. And then you have to be able to see it coming and stop it and change courses. But it's not one individual that can change the course of a station, because everything's done by committees. And these committees, more often than not, are fighting each other, enormously conflict-bound. So at the end of the day, committees can happen, but nothing gets done. And it's just the same old, same old. And unfortunately, this whole process, people get so involved in their own personal needs, they forget the audience. Well, the last thing you want to do is forget how important your audience is. Because when you don't make your audience the most important thing about the station, the audience will find another vehicle, and that's what they've done. So that leaves us with the following options. Option A is that they'll do all the programming, and these are my own personal and subjective opinions. No one's told me this. But number one would be to close down the station completely, only leave what is legally necessary. The FCC, I think, requires a chief engineer and one executive. But otherwise, you stop all this. You stop the local station board. You stop all the people from having any more input that more often than not is unprofessional and counterproductive. And then you get your best programs of your national shows and you flow them over the line. And so people turn on the station and they hear programs. It's just not any of the programs they're used to. Maybe one or two exceptions that were syndicated in the first place. They didn't originate locally, like Bonnie Faulkner, who does a great show. So that saves the station several million dollars a year and allows it time to get up on its feet. The next option would be to exchange the signal. That means that you take a 50,000-watt stage the signal in the middle of the dial that's a commercial signal, and you exchange it. Let's say someone has cash, but they don't have a strong signal. So they'll give you $5 or $6 million and give you their signal, and in turn they take yours. This is done a half year in advance, generally, so everyone has plenty of time to know, all right, you're no longer going to hear us at this signal. You're going to have to go down the dial to this one, and instead of having 50,000 watts, we have 40,000 watts. So not everybody will be able to listen, but that's not a problem today because the Internet makes up the difference. So between the Internet, what you could do, that would certainly work and would pay all of the foundation's bills. But it doesn't change any of the problems because it doesn't mean you get better programming, more professional managers or program directors. More often than not, the people who are selected to be the managers and program directors are not people who have a good background in the field, but they fit a certain political profile. And as long as you fit the political profile, you're like a comrade. Come on in, comrade. Do you have any experience? No, I don't have any experience. You good at what you do? I'm not good at what I do. But we're politically aligned. So being politically aligned or ideologically aligned and going along with something is far more significant than having really good top people, because if you had really good top people who had experience in broadcasting, managing stations, and experience in programming, you'd have outstanding programming, you'd be very competitive, and you'd have a station that's well run. That hasn't been the case since Utrecht Lead was there. It's been a long time, and even that era was filled with a lot of conflict. The next idea is they simply sell this signal, in which case there is no more BAI in the New York area. It is sold. That's highly improbable. Then the last scenario is one that I hope doesn't happen. That's where a so-called, perfect liberal, star of the liberal media comes and says, I'll save Pacifica, and takes over BAI and PFW in Washington and absorbs them into a nonprofit foundation. Of course, this is all ideological. And then all the programming then represents their interest. Has nothing to do with the community. And some people think that'd be a great idea because based upon the people I know who would be in a position to do that, they're liked by the liberals, but not the progressives. And certainly they would have a tiny audience. Right now, you can't get any smaller of an audience. If you get any smaller of an audience on BAI, you got two guys with a tin can and a string between it talking with each other.
Easy.
So, and what I am doing now, I'm trying to come up with some ideas that can help the station. And I'll be sharing my ideas probably in the next week or two. Because if I can't come up with some ideas, then one of those scenarios I just gave is a highly probable outcome. Doesn't mean it will be. I could certainly be wrong on that. All right?
Okay.
Okay, let's say hello to, is it Anna?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Anna in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm undergoing this diagnostics to have a transplant to see if I qualify for a transplant. And the question of the vaccines has come up. And I was wondering, what are my choices with them? Because I was told that if you do not accept the vaccine, they will not give you an organ.
Hello?
Yes?
I'm not aware of what your question is.
My question was, do I have to accept these vaccines, or is there a choice I can get around it, or
you always have a right, at least in New York, you have a right of exemption.
Uh-huh.
And all you have to do is go to VacAwareness or one of the vaccine support systems, and they'll give you the letters and give you the information on the lawyers who you can communicate with, who can tell you what your rights are.
Oh, really? Even for organ transplantation? Okay.
Yes.
I was told that you can't. And what is the awareness? What did you say?
I said that the Vac Truth is one. If you go to my website and go under vaccines, you'll see all the different vaccine organizations that promote freedom of choice. And they're all highly qualified. And they all have attorneys that will consult anyone who wants to get a vaccine exemption. All right. All the best to you. And let's say hello to Pam from Brooklyn. Is that it? Where's she from?
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I wanted to know about alternatives to antibiotics, especially, intravenous antibiotics, such as like vitamin C. And you had mentioned on a previous show about niacin and, whatever other natural alternatives to antibiotics you could recommend.
Okay, well, you have to look at what is antibacterial. And colloidal silver at about 250 to 500 parts per million would be my number one choice. But right behind that would be wild oregano oil. And then behind that would be olive leaf extract. And then Pau d'Arco that I'd mentioned earlier in the program. It's very strongly antibacterial, good for bacterial infections and yeast infections. And vitamin C as an intravenous agent would be terrific, but you have to build it up to where you're getting around 50 to 75,000 milligrams about three times a week, and then you'll start to see it. I would also consider quercetin, which is one of the best of the bioflavonoids and is also antibacterial as well as antiviral. In fact, all these are both antiviral and antibacterial. And those are the ones that I would focus my energy on. All right.
Gary, could I ask one thing? If it's an infection in the bone, would one of those be better or several of those be better than the others?
All of these are safe. Nothing I just mentioned would be unsafe. They all are safe. Okay. All the best to you. Sam from New Jersey. Hi, Sam.
Thank you for taking my call, Gary. I'm going to demolish a in-ground pool and fill it in with earth. Where do I find the proper earth to use? What are the parameters I should have to determine what soil I should use there?
Is this a normal pool, 20 by 40?
It's a little bit bigger. It's 20 by 40, and then it's L-shaped.
Okay. What I would do is I would get some good quality topsoil, and that is what I would use. I'm assuming that you have some form of clay on the bottom, so you have a good solid foundation.
Well, the bottom is probably concrete, but in order to abandon the pool, I have to chop up the concrete
away. What I'm saying, you're going to have to put down something to take its place so that you don't have settling. So you have to, whether it's a gunite pool, whatever kind of pool you have to have a very thick, solid base to it. So that you can get put in. But you're talking about the soil. And the soil should be soil that is proven not to come from a dump site area, not to come from any landfill area around it, because toxins seep out of the immediate landfill through the water and rain and air and go into the soil surrounding us. You get very high levels of lead and other toxic metals. You want to make sure that the soil has not had any sludge put on it. Sludge is now very common that they're using it for fertilizing and also for spreading over farmland. And that you don't want, because it has not only heavy metals, but medicines that people have used come through their body and go right out, and it's not destroyed by heat. Now, heavy metals can't be destroyed by heat. Parasites are generally not destroyed by heat because they insist themselves, and you don't want that in your soil. So it's very easy to get good quality topsoil. Now, if you get organic quality topsoil, meaning there's been no sprays on it, it'll run you generally somewhere around $1,200 a truckload, and two or three truckloads, and you've got all that you need. So it's not that expensive, and yet it's easy to get. All right?
Thank you very much.
All the best to you. And we're coming up to the end of our program today, and I want to close it out with a couple of thoughts. We have been told that we have a very prosperous middle class in the United States, and we should be very proud of that because we are exceptional. And as a result of that, we should feel very good about our government. I don't feel good about my government on any level. I wish I could. I grew up as a kind of an idealist, and I grew up believing in that authority would never abuse itself until I came to New York and started to realize that almost everything I had been told about social issues was wrong. So instead of holding on to those false beliefs, I looked for what is. And when I look at an agency, whether it's state, federal, or local, I see bloat. I see invasiveness and diminishing my freedoms. I see the evisceration of our Constitution and Bill of Rights. That concerns me. Unfortunately, it doesn't concern enough people, because we still trust our politicians. The fact that they have a 9% approval rating, to me, is just amazing. What idiots still believe the politicians are honorable people? They're not. There may be a few exceptions, but the vast majority are just, they've been pimping for special interests, whether it's ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and its 300 corporations, or the Council on Foreign Affairs, or Bilderberg. They have all been manipulating us for their own ends. And that's unfortunate. And then we're told, oh, but don't worry, you've got a large, vital, successful middle class. Well, Les Leopold corrects us. America doesn't have the number one richest middle class in the world. We're ranked 27th. And it's those corrupt politicians who've outsourced our jobs and kept down the living wage to make sure that we stay that way, because they want the profits to go to the politicians, or the profits going to the corporations and the politicians are those who help keep them wealthy. America is the richest country on earth. We have the most millionaires, the most billionaires, and our wealthiest citizens, according to Les Leopold, who have garnered more of the planet's riches than any other group in the world. We have hedge fund managers who make more in 1 hour than the average family makes in 21 years. Now, this opulence is supposed to trickle down to the rest of us, improving the lives of everyday Americans. At least that's what free market cheerleaders repeatedly promise us. Unfortunately, it's a lie. One of the biggest ever perpetrated on the American people. Our middle class is falling further and further behind in comparison to the rest of the world. We keep hearing that America is number one. Well, we're not. The most telling comparative measure is median wealth per adult. It describes the amount of wealth accumulated by the person precisely in the middle of the wealth distribution. 50% of the adult population has more wealth, while 50% has less. You can't get more middle than that. Wealth is measured by the total sum of all your assets. That means your home, your bank accounts, your stocks and bonds, minus your liabilities, like your outstanding loans and debts. It's the best indicator we have for individual and family prosperity. And while the never-ending accumulation of wealth may be wrecking the planet, wealth also provides basic security, especially in a country like ours with such skimpy social programs. Wealth allows us to survive periods of economic turmoil. Wealth allows our children to go to college without incurring crippling debts, at least those who can, or to get help for the down payment on their new home. And, it comes down to this. In Australia, the average middle-class person has over $200,000 in net wealth. In Luxembourg, $153,000. Japan, $141,000. Italy, the average Italian, middle-class, their net wealth, $123,000. In Belgium, $119,000. In Great Britain, $115,000. In Iceland, $95,000. Singapore, $95,000. Switzerland, $87,000. Austria, $81,000. Canada, $81,000. France, $81,000. Norway, $79,000. Finland, $73,000. The Netherlands, $61,000. Ireland, that was supposed to be dead broke, $60,000 the average middle class person owns. And Spain, $53,000. Taiwan, $45,000. Cyprus, $40,000. And then you hit the United States, way at the bottom of the list, $38,786. $38,786 is what the average person's net worth is. That is a problem. Why? We don't have real universal health care. We pay more and still have poor health outcomes than all other industrialized countries. Should a serious illness strike, you could become impoverished. And that's the reality of it. Weak labor laws undermine unions and give large corporations more power to keep wages and benefits down. Unions now represent less than 7% of all private sector workers, the lowest ever recorded. Our minimum wage is pathetic, especially in comparison to other developing nations. We're 13th. Nobody can live decently on $7.25 an hour because then you got taxes taken out of that. Wall Street is out of control. Once deregulation started 30 years ago under Bill Clinton, money has gushed to the top as Wall Street was free to find more and more unethical ways to fleece us. Higher education puts our kids into debt. In most of the countries, higher education is practically tuition free. Indebted students are not likely to accumulate wealth anytime soon. It's hard to improve your station life if you're in prison. Think how many people we have, millions in prison for what? Drugs? Our tax structures favor the rich and their corporations that no longer pay their fair share. The wealth dominate politics. Nowhere else in the developed world are the rich and their corporations able with such ease and such large bank accounts to get elections bought with impunity. And big money dominates the media. The real story about how we're getting ripped off is hidden in a blizzard of BS that comes from our major media outlets brought to you by Fox and others. Americans encourage globalization of production so that workers here are constantly competing with the lower wage workers all over the world, and we lose. And that's why we have such a pathetic situation for our middle class. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening.